We are the Sunday Morning Linux Review, and we are at Ohio Linux Fest.
Yes. And I'm eating hash browns.
Yeah, and I have my sandwich and the hash browns over here, too. Thank you, Matt, for going to...
on the mile one hike.
Yeah, really. What was it, though? The chicken and egg?
Yes.
That was called?
It's called the chicken and egg.
So you do breakfast and lunches?
Yes.
And we plan on grabbing people as they walk by and make them talk to us.
Yeah, but it's early, so not many people are here. We do have Murph here.
Yep.
So say hi, Murph. There you go. Yeah, the problem is Tony can't remember the name of the server.
Yeah. I'm used to using our CNAME instead of the actual name of the server. And because...
he has DNS set up his house.
No.
No?
No, I have a CNAME to live.smlr.us.
Yeah.
Because smlr.us is screwed up right now.
Oh, it's not working.
So we have to know...
The IP address of the server, yeah. Yeah.
You know what? It maybe just be kwisher.noip.com.
Is kwisher on?
No.
No, kwisher's not on.
He doesn't usually come on until like 10 o'clock or 11 after you guys leave.
He'll wait for the odd then. He's not going to lower himself to get the YouTube stream.
Sorry about that chatter. Oh, and we may not be releasing the show for about a week, depending on how long this domain thing takes.
Yeah.
So, what did we do this week? I woke up yesterday morning and realized that the website broke. And investigating, it was all my fault. I broke it.
It wasn't your fault. It was one of one's fault. You asked them to move the domain months ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm supposed to be transferred over to Mary's account. Something happened, I guess. I thought it was done. I deleted my 1&1 account 2 months ago. And yesterday morning, they decided to actually delete it.
So that's why I know everyone out there is not getting any smlr.us.
Right. Although, because we're using the Google feed burner, our feed is still running, and because we don't have our downloads on our website, people can still download our old episodes. It's just they can't get any current info. So go to our G+. We're doing everything on G+ right now.
Right.
You know, I looked up. Oh, and I sent it to my SMLR email. I looked up how to grab a YouTube stream and then stream it out to the butt server or the Icecast server. So I'm going to do that for a moment. I know it's dead air, but you guys are used to that. At least it's not like the Tilts guys.
Well, yeah, those Tilts guys. They don't do anything but dead air.
You're saying that to me as if I am a member of Tilts. I was getting insulted by others too. It's good that you guys listen to a quality podcast from time to time. So that's
yeah, but Tilts isn't one of them. All right, so what did I do this week? We had to run some power for a client to power up a new cab, and we were running the power under the floor, and Andrew was reaching as far as he could reach, and I had a tile pulled up, and I was reaching as far as I could reach, and it wasn't quite enough, so I rolled over onto my back and slid up under the floor to reach where Andrew was passing the power through from, and then couldn't get out. Because I'm a fat man. And fat man, half on his back, all the way on his back, half under a floor, not a good scene. Not a good scene at all. It took two gentlemen to pull me up under the floor.
Oh, no.
So with the kernel update, we had no release candidate this week so far. The main line is still 3.11. So our stable updates were on Saturday, September 7th, 2013 at 22:34 Pacific Daylight Time. Greg Koharman released kernel 3.0.95 with 8 files changed, 63 lines inserted, and 25 lines deleted. And on, also on Saturday, September 7th, 2013 at 22:34 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Koharman released kernel 3.4.61 with 16 files changed, 124 lines inserted, and 50 lines deleted. And then on Saturday, the 7th of September still, 2013, at 22:35 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Koharman released kernel 3.10.11 with 50 files changed, 220 lines inserted, and 124 lines deleted. And then on Tuesday, the 10th of September, Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.51, except I can't find his release announcement. I searched all over LKML, can't find it anywhere. And so that's all I have on it, is that he released the kernel 3.2.51 on Tuesday the 10th. All right. And then the kernel quote of the week comes from the man himself, Linus Torvalds. Damn, I already named the 3.21 after the less gifted squirrel that didn't seem to understand that he should run away from the car. But if I had seen this hard-hitting news report earlier, we'd have a different kernel name. And what he's referring to is there was a photo of a frog being launched into space along with the latest rocket launched from NASA. And I'll have a link in the show notes. I don't have it in my current notes, but I will put it there and it'll be in the show notes.
Very cool.
Whenever they're accessible, whenever 1&1 stops dicking with our website.
Yeah.
And that's the kernel update.
Very cool. Thank you, man.
Yep.
All right. And I guess we'll go on to distros this week. And it's a short.
As soon as I can get the distro watch page open, I'm right there with you.
Well, there's one distro, and they claim it's a distro also, man.
It's not a distro. I got backing on this when we get the listener feedback. Listener, it is not a distro.
It's beyond.
Hey, wait, Carl. Smartest man in the room. Come here for a second.
Real quick. Okay.
LFS, Linux from scratch. Distribution or not a distribution?
Oh, man, I heard the podcast. I'm trying to remember. Who do I want to back? To me, whether you call it a distribution or not, I could agree with either line of thinking.
Not a distribution. Come on. There's no media. You download the installation instructions and it's a book.
Man, I hate this. Because I don't want to agree with Matt, but I have to.
You got no choice.
Oh, man. I have to.
LFS, not a distribution. Thank you very much. The smartest man in the room, Carl Miller.
All right, well, that distribution was released this week. Linux from scratch was on the 8th. And then...
Wait a minute, I got to tell Ken Fallon he's wrong. I got to tell Ken Fallon he's wrong.
Manjaro was released on the 13th with 0.8.7.1. And as you may know, Manjaro is Arch-based with XFCE or OpenBase, or OpenBox as the distro manager. Next, we have Body Linux with 2.4.0, which is also minimalist, and they use Enlightened. Or no. It's a minimalist and Enlightened desktop with the base on 12.04, Ubuntu 12.04. But there was a lot of releases.
Yes, there were.
We have OS 4 on the 13th, which it's OS 4 Open Linux 14, which again is a Ubuntu-based desktop. On the 13th, we have OpenELEC, which is a home theater distro, which uses XBMC. And I run that on my Raspberry Pi.
Yes, you do. And how's that working out for you?
Raspberry Pi's a little underpowered for it. I have the A version, so that's probably why.
Yes.
Not enough RAM.
Right.
And then we have Beyond Linux from scratch, 7.4. That was on the 14th. which I guess is an extra book to go along with Blank Subscribe.
Oh my God. It says, Bruce Dubbs has announced the release of Beyond Linux from Scratch 7.4, a book that extends the Linux from Scratch project with extra software. It provides step-by-step instructions for compiling open source software, not a distribution. I'm sorry.
It says it right here on DistroWatch. It's distribution.
I don't care. DistroWatch is wrong.
All right.
We got the definitive statement from Carl Miller, the smartest man in the room.
Just because one guy says it doesn't mean everybody. All right. Well, anyway, going on to the top five. Yes, number five is Majita. With 1594.
And trending up.
And number four is Simplice with 1617.
And trending up.
Number three is Debian with 1726.
And trending down.
Number two is Ubuntu with 1760.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot, we have Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2982.
And trending up.
All right. So I thought maybe we'd take a break and walk around, maybe point the camera at people and see if they want to talk to us.
Let's get Murph first. He's our best candidate.
Hey, Murph.
Murph, you want to be on air interview?
Sure.
With how the con's going for you?
Sure. You got it.
We are. So, as you know,
I'll catch you later.
Ohio Linux Fest. We're at Ohio Linux Fest.
I'm aware of that. Yes. Yep.
And we have not given you any money or gifts to make you say good things about us, right?
Wait, you said the check was coming, though, right? never mind.
All right, so how's it going for you?
It's great. It's been a great conference. A lot of good talks already. The Friday talks have been good, even though they're, you know, sort of pre the whole thing getting running. It's all been great.
Cool. Yeah, and we all
met. What was your favorite talk you enjoyed so far?
I like Mad Dog's keynote. It was good.
Yeah,
You didn't feel it was worthy to come to.
I fell asleep
through it. Yeah. And the scripting one was very good.
The scripting one I did enjoy.
It started basic. It sort of stepped you up from the bottom.
I think it was a little too basic for me, but yeah, it was still very good presentation.
Yeah, I thought it was good. You know, I knew a little of the more basic stuff, but right, I thought it was, that's sort of the right way to approach it when you're talking to a diverse audience.
I was hoping it would eventually get a little more in depth.
Yeah, you only had an hour though,
right,
so yeah, I was sort of hoping for a little more meat too, but it was well done.
It was very well done.
Even though it was stuff that I was familiar with, I was still engaged.
Exactly,
and it was still interesting.
He explained if statements and for
and
loops
case statements,
and case.
Yeah.
He explained that all very well. So
yeah,
what he did, he did very well.
Yeah, that's why you know it's a good presentation. Even though it was material that I was more familiar with, it was still engaging, and I still picked stuff up out of it.
Yes,
so I thought it was good.
I agree 100%.
So,
but did you go to that documentation presentation?
No, I didn't go to that. I went to the EUFI presentation that was going at the same time.
How was that?
It was pretty good. He had a lot of good knowledge on that. There's still clearly in the community, when he opened it up for questions, some debates on exactly all the repercussions of things like secure boot and EFI.
Right.
I think EFI on its own, UEFI on its own, is a good thing. Secure boot is good, but as it's being implemented with only, you know, one large company in Redmond having the keys, I think that's really a flawed strategy.
But
that's flawed for everybody but that large company in Redmond.
I'm not a fan of secure boot.
Tough.
UEFI is not that, is a pretty good way to do it, though, because we get at work, we've got the new servers from Dell, these new 420s, and they come with UEFI, and we're able to install CentOS right on them and go right.
Oh, yeah, nothing wrong with the EFI. I mean, I'm running an old MacBook, and it's EFI, and it works well, even though the Apple one is somewhat stripped down from the newer stuff.
Right.
It's just that the whole secure boot thing, you know, right now, a large company in Redmond has such a stranglehold on the manufacturers of all PCs because they want that certification,
right,
that it will make it difficult for people to introduce Linux to people. You know, you get your new laptop from a Dell or Lenovo
that's why there's
or someone like that. to get a Linux distribution on them will be much more difficult because you'll either have to turn Secure Boot off or load your own keys in, if that's even possible.
Yeah. No, there's got to be a way to turn Secure Boot off.
Yeah. Well, I would like the Secure Boot to be something that can work for the user. I don't want it off. I would like to be able to load a kernel that's either been signed by me or signed by the distribution and know that every time I boot that that kernel hasn't been tampered with. That's a fantastic feature, and I'd like to be able to use that.
But people, at that point, then people would need to be in control of their own keys.
Yes.
And
that's
I agree.
That's the part that would be good to implement. Most people walking in off the street will never go to that level.
No.
But at least it would be good if it were possible on these.
I agree 100% with that, Murph. If I could control the keys, if I had control of the keys, I would be all for it.
You have the ability to upload your key, whether you signed it yourself because you're that technical, or you want to trust a key from Canonical or from Red Hat.
Exactly,
or from, the larger distributions will be the only ones that would be likely to have that sort of thing in place. But it would be good to have those options because I don't want Secure Boot turned off because it's got some really good features. I want to be able to control it or at least be able to, have a distro put their keys in so that I can utilize that functionality.
Couldn't it be something like SSH keys where you make it yourself and whenever you connect to that server, that server makes them, whenever you connect to that server, if it's different from what you previously had, then it'll
Right, and what it would be is you would have your key in the EUFI.
Right,
exactly.
And then if your kernel, it matched 100 times, the 101 time after you've downloaded some malware and run it, all of a sudden now your kernel doesn't match your existing key.
Right.
That's bad. So even if you sign that key yourself,
unless you've got Userland malware, it's never going to give you any alert for Userland malware.
Well, yes, that's a different issue.
Right. But the reason it works for Windows, though, is because Windows Userland malware affects their kernel. Because guess what? There's no real Userland in Windows.
But then that same thing would happen is when that kernel got checked by, so this can work for everybody.
Right.
I'm not against Windows systems being more secure because, then I don't have to clean them up as much.
Right.
That would be a good thing.
But I also think that ship has sailed. We're never going to see control of the keys at that level.
I don't know that it's necessarily mutually exclusive. That's something that they can implement without compromising the system, I believe. So that's what I'm hopeful for.
Yeah, but
whether that happens or not, it'll be another
issue.
I think
the ship on that has sailed because Microsoft is so opposed to that. I just don't think we're ever going to see it.
Yeah. We'll have to see how it shakes out and encourage, with your purchases, encourage your manufacturers to put those features in that you're looking for.
Sure.
That's why you shop around to, when you're a more advanced user, you shop around and you say, does this motherboard implement the features I want? If it doesn't, then you don't buy that one. Hopefully we'll have options that allow us to do that.
True. And again, I'd love to see it. I just don't think we're ever going to.
Yeah. No. Hopefully we will.
Yes, hopefully we will. So anything else happened so far that you really enjoyed?
It's really as much as the talks, it's about seeing people. I've seen a lot of great people, people you talk to online and people you listen to on podcasts, oddly enough, and you finally get to meet them face-to-face and you see them when you come to these conferences.
Yeah, that's the hallway track is always my favorite track.
The community is really what makes it worthwhile to come to. If it was just the talks, I don't know if I'd come out here every single year, but because of the people,
My favorite part of this convention and PenguinCon also that I go to every year, my favorite part is always the hallway track.
Yeah.
It's seeing the people. So.
Yep. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Hey, all right.
Thanks a lot for
stopping by, Murph.
Hey, and thank you guys for recording here and supporting the community as well.
Yeah, thank
all
you.
Right. All right, thanks. Appreciate it. Welcome back to the studio audience.
And we've been joined by Kevin O'Brien. Introduce
yourself. Yeah, yeah. Should I get over here?
It's this mic.
Okay.
This is the live broadcast, and this one's the recording.
Okay. All right. So I'm getting a little closer to both. So I just wanted to come by, say hello.
All right.
Yeah. I think since we talked, you've been on 3 or 4 different other podcasts, right? Or how many?
Linux Link Tech Show, Linux for the Rest of Us, Hacker Public Radio. But, I'm the publicity guy for this little festival we have. So that's my job, is to get out there and publicize.
But hopefully we're the podcast that's nearest and dearest to your heart, right?
I love all of my children.
So, We had planned to have coffee and stuff, but Einstein Brothers is closed.
Yeah, Matt told me that.
Yeah, they were open last year. They're closed this year. What's up with that, Einstein Brothers? Come on.
They must have felt they weren't getting enough Saturday business.
We gave them 100 and something last year.
Yeah, about 130 bucks we dropped there last year on bagels and coffee.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, well.
So, how's the festival for you guys?
That's a little coffee from Chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, the festival's great. Yeah, I wanted to talk about what I did yesterday and what I'm going to do today.
Uh-huh.
So, what I did yesterday at the fest was I went and saw Software-Defined Networking and Open Networking Standards. That was presented by somebody from IBM, I think, since it was half IBM sales spiel and half information. And then I went to see Scripting Zero to Hero, which was by a gentleman I knew, but I didn't know I knew him until I saw him. That's by David, works for Red Hat.
Oh, yeah.
He put that on, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Oh, I wish I was here for that.
And then I skipped the help your library crash my app because I just wasn't interested. And then I went to the Keeping an Open Mind in Open Source. And
wait a minute. You keeping an open mind?
I always keep an open mind, Tony. It's a fallacy that I am closed-minded conservative. I'm an open-minded conservative.
I will testify to that.
Yes. And then I went to Raising the Utility of Your Documentation by Example. And I have to say, of all of the presentations I went to yesterday, that was the best. This guy knew his shit when it came to documentation writing, and he imparted some real helpful knowledge.
And he's part of our committee. He's one of the people who puts on Ohio Linux.
Because I have done documentation writing. I did it for Borders Books for their IT department, and I wish I'd have known some of the tips he gave me yesterday when I was doing it. Let's just leave it at that. But it was really good information. I really got a lot out of that. So
I didn't get a chance to sit in, but I'm going to look forward to getting the audio on that one.
It was good. Yeah, he also set a camera up and recorded it.
Yeah.
So I don't know where it'll be available, but it was recorded.
Well, when the videos are available, I will let you know.
Yeah, and one of the guys yesterday, his slides. It might have been the Raising the Utility of Your Documentation by Example guy. I would like a copy of his slides, too.
Mm-hmm.
But will they be available online on your site? Or?
That I cannot say. I don't know that we have any arrangement to get the slide decks publicized.
Because one of the talks I went to yesterday said they already gave you their slide deck.
Yeah.
It was the Scripting Zero to Hero David guy.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between they sent us the slides and we have them published on the website.
Ah.
We have everyone send in their slides because we want to review them for appropriate content.
Oh. So no naked chicks or naked guys or penises.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just one of those little things that we have to do.
Okay.
So
have you asked the presenters how they're licensing the slide decks? Can you republish them?
You know, that's a good question. I think if we got permission to do that.
Because a lot of conferences, what they do is they make the author, the presenters, license their slide decks under Creative Commons attribution.
Well, I know we have them sign a waiver on the audio recordings and the video recordings.
Okay.
And I just don't know that anyone has thought about the slide deck
part of it.
That might be something that we do for next year. I have plans
that
we're going to, you know, build out the website with a lot of this information.
Sure, sure.
So
that'll be good. That'll be a good thing.
Unfortunately, Drupal just drives me absolutely nuts.
I don't know why you're using Drupal anyway.
It wasn't my decision. I have the feeling Drupal is really awesome, and I'm just not smart enough to figure out what to do.
I don't know. I use WordPress.
That's what I use. I use WordPress. It can do everything that I want to do, but then I'm not trying to run a shopping cart on my website.
Well, Magento is what you'd want for a shopping cart anyway, so. Yeah.
Is Magento open source?
Yes. They have an open source edition, and they have an enterprise edition.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And, by the way, NexusNet specializes in Magento hosting. So if anybody out there is looking for a Magento web-optimized website, NexusNet.
You should really work on getting your work to pay for your trips.
So, no, we did a big white paper on optimization of Magento, and it was accepted by the community tremendously. We presented it at a Magento event. I forget where the event was, somewhere. But after we presented it, then our freaking orders went through the roof.
Yeah?
Wow. Yeah, for about a month we were getting two clusters a week for about a month. Anyway, back to yesterday's...
Support the community and they'll support you, huh? What a concept.
Yeah, I know. We're all about it at Nexus. We support a lot of open source stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
And then I wanted to see OpenStack storage with Ceph.
Mm-hmm.
However, with working nights and changing my schedule to be here in the daytime, I was exhausted. I had to go take a nap.
Yeah.
Right. So I couldn't go to it. That was the last thing I saw yesterday.
When the audio is available, you can...
Yeah.
And I am hoping that all of the audios are going to be available, you know, by the end of November.
Oh, that's very cool.
I discovered last year that if Vance, who does the recording, if he can get me the raw files, I can just take like a weekend and edit and upload and do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, you're going to post the raw audio almost all the time anyway. I'm a little trimmed off the front, a little trimmed off the back.
That's basically it. And then, you know, I run a script that does a little bit of noise reduction.
Oh, yeah, the noise reduction and the compression.
And I do everything in Audacity.
Right.
And then upload everything with appropriate tags. So, but there was, like, you know, it's like 40 or 50 of them.
Yeah. If you need some help, I can come on over and bring my laptop and make it go a little bit faster.
Okay, yeah, but it wasn't too bad. Part of the problem last year was I had... I know you weren't involved in any of this, but several other people said, hey, you know, we'll help and, you know, get everything up there faster. And then... Weeks and months went by, and I finally just said, screw it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
You know, that's what it comes down to a lot of times. Yeah. People have the best intentions, and you got to love them for it, but they have the best intentions when they make the offer, but then follow-through just isn't there a lot of the times.
Yeah. So I'm just planning, you know, as soon as Vance turns the files over to me, let's take a weekend, get it done, get it up. But what I want to do is, you know, build out all of this stuff on the website that, you know, you can check out the schedule from last year, and that will have links to all of the audio files that go with each of the talks. And, because right now what happens is they're all on archive.org.
Right. That's what we use then, archive.org as our content host.
Right.
So
it makes sense. I mean, why would you do anything else?
Exactly.
Right, because they're going to archive it anyways.
Right.
But the problem is that you then have to go to archive.org and start figuring out what your search terms are. And you don't see. So what I'd like to do is have it that on our website we have a direct link to the file for each talk.
Yeah.
You know, along with the description of the talk from the program.
Oh yeah. That's
it's a little
idea.
Bit of work to get it done.
Yeah. But ours links back and forth to each other so that if you find us on archive.org, it has a link back to our website to that specific episode, so you can read through the show notes.
Yeah.
And then the other way around, if you're on our website, it links over to the
archive.org.
So I've got a lot of plans on things I need to do with the website this year. That's the next big push.
Yeah, I've looked into Drupal. I took a class a year ago, but it's a lot of work.
Who's your host?
Oh, dear God. Who is it? I think at the moment it's HostGator, but
Did they give you any kind of a deal?
Hostgator.
That's ending, from what I heard. So.
Well, you should look and see what they want to charge you, because really, NexusNet, we're Magento, which is a shopping cart, so we're Magento optimized, mm-hmm. and you can get a SIP 100 Magento optimized account for $25 a month.
Okay, well, I will mention it. That aspect of things is someone else's department.
Right. But you can.
So did you get to Mad Dog's keynote?
No, I slept.
Oh, dude.
That's what I'm saying. I love Mad Dog, man. I've met Mad Dog like 4 times. I love Mad Dog.
Mad Dog did a wonderful keynote and then did a boff session at 9 o'clock.
If I'd have known that, I was back in the hotel by 9. I could have went to Mad Dog's boff. What was it on?
Project Kawa.
What's Kawa?
Well, okay, thank you. That's a great leading question. Mad Dog has set up, Kawa is a Portuguese word. Mad Dog started going to Brazil some years ago and started taking a look at, they have in Brazil, it's an extremely urban population. In fact, most of Latin America is really urban. And there are a lot of places that don't have any internet access, but there's an Mad Dog looks at it and says, well, that means there's an opportunity here, you know? And so the idea of Project Kawa is that they're going to set up people in Brazil that they're going to train and get them going as entrepreneurs to say, you know, in this big apartment building, you know, this one guy, you know, will get internet to the basement. And then, you know, do a wireless distribution through the rest of the building and have thin clients in each of the apartments. And he's run the numbers and, like, you can do all of this and charge, like, $6 a month and make a profit.
But $6 a month, especially, are you going into the slums in Brazil, or are you? If you're
yes.
See, that's an awful lot of money for.
And that's why you've got to listen to his talk, because he not only says it can be done, he has examples where it has been done.
Mm-hmm.
And he specifically, so what you're referring to in Brazil, they call them favelas.
Yeah, favela. I couldn't remember the
name. And he told the story last night about this young fellow who. You know, like started at the age of 12 putting this together, and you know, by the time he was 19 he had 6 people working for him full time on this business of providing wireless access to the internet in the favela. And he said it was like reverse blight. It spread out from that seed a circle of prosperity through the favela.
Wow.
That's cool.
That is really cool.
And then he's got a story from Soweto that is very similar.
Right.
I
knew they were doing something like that in South Africa, but it was, I thought the project was called something else.
Oh, yeah. No, Project Kawa is what he's doing in Brazil. And part of the thing about the BOF was, would something like that work in the United States? And that's what the discussion was about. But he told this story, I've heard the story a couple of times about how he was in South Africa. He was talking to one of the government people, and they went into Soweto, and he said, oh, this is a natural place. I mean, the terrain is like a bowl.
Yeah.
He said, this is a natural place for a Wi-Fi mesh network. And the government guy said, oh, no. I mean, no one here would have any idea what you're talking about. I mean, and Mad Dog said, I'm not so sure. I think if you look, you would find there are people here using free software, and you just don't know about it. And he gets on a plane, he goes back. The fellow he was talking to goes back to his boss and says, well, I had this conversation. The boss says, well, I guess we should go out there and take a look. So they set up a meeting to talk about the free software. I hope I'm doing, Mad Dog would tell the story
right.
1,000 times better. But they set up a meeting, talk about free software, 300 people show up.
Wow.
And
blew them right out of their socks.
Yeah, and then they started talking to him. Oh, yeah, we do. In fact, this guy over here has been sending patches to Linus Torvalds for the last 6 years. And so there were the people in Soweto who were trying to figure out how to get this done on their own, because they said, well, the government will never do anything for us.
Right.
And the government, of course,
running their business and their consultancy on a dial-up modem because there were no other options and they were desperate for something else.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Wow.
What is that? How do you spell Soweto?
Soweto.
S-O-W-E-T-O, right?
Yeah. It's a southwest township.
Yeah, it's a ghetto in right outside of Johannesburg, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look up, see if he already has some information out there on a website, so I can put a link in the show notes.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know if it might be Linux International or...
Yeah, it was something. It wasn't the same project. It was a totally different project.
It was just that he happened to be there talking to these people and then stimulated something.
Right. That's fantastic.
I guess the issue is, don't assume that just because people don't have a lot of money that they're not interested.
Oh, no.
It may just be a matter of figuring out how to get them the resources.
Right.
And the idea of Project Kawa is, and he's very clear that he's interested in providing sustainable private sector jobs. You know, Mad Dog is in some ways a conservative, so I'm sure he'd love that. And so he does not want big government programs. He wants people making a living.
Because that's the way you make things sustainable, is you make them entrepreneurial-based, because then it's sustainable.
And that's exactly what Project Kawa is about. So, is you provide some support, and so he's working with the government, right?
Sure.
But it's more along things like providing underwriting and support to get the program going.
Exactly, and some support in getting your initial backbones into places.
Right.
But after that, leave it up to the entrepreneurs.
So
they'll do a fantastic job.
So, for example, the entrepreneurs would get bank loans, but banks don't want to do the loans, so the government has to provide an underwriting guarantee.
Sure. So that's perfectly. I have no problem with that.
There's a lot of times where a public-private partnership makes sense.
Yep. So. And in circumstances like that, it especially makes sense, because who are the people that are going to want to try and do this? They're not people that have money. They're people that are going to have to take out loans that aren't bank-friendly people.
Right.
So where else are they going to turn? They have to turn to the government to help underwrite. Mm-hmm. And that's an entirely acceptable use of public funds as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
So...
And making loans available is a big deal for so many of these development projects.
Exactly.
Which is why I'm a regular lender through Kiva. If you've ever heard of Kiva.
I've heard of Kiva. I got to be honest, I've never given anybody any money.
So far, I've had every penny repaid.
I firmly
and I relend it, and it gets repaid.
I firmly believe you do. It's one of those things that you say to yourself, oh, I really want to do that. And then the next time you see it, oh, I really want to do that. And you never do. You just got to get off your ass and do it, is what you got to do.
Well, I don't know if we've ever talked about the fact I first came to Michigan to get my doctorate in economics. And so, when I was studying development economics, that was like one of the big things was, how do you get credit into the hands of poor people in third world countries?
Microloans.
If they can get a small amount of money, it can transform their lives. But they can't find anyone that's going to lend them the, $200.
Right. And their incentive to pay it back is so much greater, I think, than somebody taking out a traditional style loan, because they're like, oh, well, if I default, it's a bank. Whereas these people know it's not a bank. It's somebody like you giving the money. You know what I mean? And their incentive to keep that process going is greater than it would be if it was a bank.
Yeah,
I feel.
Yeah, it's very cool. Is that all around the world? Or do you get to know the person?
All around the world. You get reports.
Okay. So is it you give Kiva the money and then people borrow from that, or you give straight to that person?
Kiva is the middleman.
Okay.
So generally what you do is you contribute in $25 increments.
Wait, but don't they like have a list of projects?
Yes.
And you give to the project?
And you pick a project that you're interested in.
Okay.
And then, you know, generally they ask for like a 5 or a 10% on top of that to help support Kiva itself. And they partner with...
right, because these loans are all done interest-free, right? Or very, very low interest.
Low interest, I think.
So.
And they partner with development agencies. So there's someone there that they're partnering with who is saying, you know, we'll keep an eye on all of these borrowers and,
right,
you know, keep you up to date on what they're doing. And so you get reports back. It's not a bad deal.
Cool.
Yeah. So all of this just from seeing Mad Dog, and that's why you need to come to Ohio Linux Fest. Where else are you going to hear this stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. That's why you need to be at Ohio Linux Fest. It is the place to be, and if you're not here, you're square.
So in 45 minutes, Mark Spencer from Digium is going to take the stage.
Yes, and hopefully we'll be wrapping up our broadcast so I can go see that.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. And then later on, we've got Robin Bergeron, who is the project leader for Fedora.
And the BSD guy is the
Kirk
closing
McCusick.
That's the one I really want to see.
If you find an opportunity to, you know, sit down at a bar stool between Kirk McCusick and Mad Dog, you will want to take that opportunity.
I'm sure I will.
I've met Mad Dog
a couple of times before, and I've had a couple of beers with him. But, he's a great guy. I love Mad Dog. And from what I've heard of Kurt, he's very similar. So.
Yeah.
So... Do we want to do a kernel news update?
Yeah, we should do a little bit of our show stuff.
Oh. Speaking of kernel news.
Yes.
We had a guy from the, I heard a report that someone from the kernel documentation team came to that documentation talk that you liked.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So let's hope we made
get
a positive contribution there. So
117 readme files? Just isn't cutting it, guys.
Okay, I'll let you get back to your podcast. I got stuff to do.
All right, so thanks,
nice
Kevin. Thanks for stopping by.
Yep.
You want to be on air?
I want to be on air?
Yes. Have you been to any talks yesterday? Or? All right, come on over and tell us about it. I'm sorry. Tell us who you are. And
all right. Well, have you guys heard of us before?
Oh yeah, Sunday Morning Linux Review.
Oh, yeah, I'm Martin Obando. I'm with Podnuts.
Oh okay. So Martin Obando. I had no idea.
So I host Geeksters. I got Mitch over there with us.
Right, right.
So yeah. Wow, I didn't know you guys knew me.
we hear them talking about you.
Well,
we,
I follow you on Google Plus. And,
oh yeah.
So
I gotta shake your hand then.
Right there.
Yeah, right there.
You got the thumbs up going.
Yes, that was a picture from Mitch last night. Yeah. Yeah, no, so we were
cool.
With Geeksters, I flew all the way out from Portland.
All right.
Oh, so wow. I was going to fly out with Cody Cooper, and then some last minute stuff came up, and he couldn't make it. So I flew out to Baltimore, and then Dora and Mitch picked me up, and we drove from Baltimore here.
From Baltimore?
Wow.
Oh. That's Portland, a ride.
Portland, Oregon.
Oregon. Wow,
so
yeah.
Representing the West Coast.
All right.
Yeah. Good 3,000-mile flight.
Yeah. Yeah, we got delayed a little bit, but it's good. But yeah, yesterday, this is my first OLF. It's definitely not my last.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely not my last.
It's definitely a great convention. I enjoy it a lot.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know they talk a lot about, because Jonathan Nidai was going to also join us, but at the last minute, he couldn't make it either. And so they talk a lot about the Northeast Linux Fest. And that was another one that they meet up at. And because they're so close, I'm going to have to pick one. So next year, probably just be this. Because just the timing and getting away from work and stuff.
I always have great intentions. I'm going enough, and then I don't. So, but yeah. So, what have you enjoyed here at the con so far?
I got to meet Mad Dog. That was one of the. Yeah. I heard about it. He was up in our room last night. We were talking. Got a chance just to sit down one on one, just ask him some questions.
Yeah,
that was really fun.
I've had that experience two times because he's been to PenguinCon two times. That's where I met him twice.
Yeah.
Pretty intimately, and he was here last year. I met him briefly then too. But yeah, Mad Dog's a great, great individual.
Yeah.
Did he ever? If you get a chance to, again, and you bump into him again, ask him about when he first met Linus, when Linus first came to the United States.
Well, that was, he mentioned that in his keynote. He talked about that, and he was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he mentioned that in his keynote last night. That was funny.
Okay.
Then he did kind of a last-minute boff about Project... how are they, he says
Kawa?
It. Yeah, Kawa, there it is. And that was really interesting. I didn't know much about it. Good. I'm interested how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
That's got a good.
That's
got,
really cool.
It's got a lot of potential to it.
Because I'm a big supporter of anything that's entrepreneurial based. Because I really think that's how you develop things and get things going. Is you get people involved on an entrepreneurial level. And then the growth is just phenomenal.
Right, you make it personal.
Yes.
And by making it personal, it's going to succeed. Because now it's not just me going to work 9 to 5, check in, check out. I'm involved with my clients, but you disassociate yourself. Because really, if I fail, I'm not really failing. My company's failing.
Right.
So you make it personal. If it fails, it's on your shoulder. So you then strive to make it. You strive to make it work because you know. I run my own business, and so I know how that works.
Yeah, I used to, but my customers all evaporated, so I had to take a regular job.
And I've had the same idea with running internet in the apartment complexes.
Yeah.
Because I would say about 4 or 5 years ago when I lived in an apartment, I wanted to do that. I'm like, hey, I could just have one internet coming in. I could split it off. And then I thought of it as entrepreneurial is like making some money off of it.
Right.
It's like all these people would have it and nobody did because, it wasn't the best of the apartments I lived in.
Right.
So I also thought about it as helping people, kind of like what Mad Dog is talking about.
Yeah, and you take that, earlier you had to make sure that you had a decent system and you had to have power, and now with PoE and prices dropping and, the Pi and stuff that just runs so low voltage and just barely needs anything to get by, and the inverse now of we're kind of going back to a terminal server mindset.
Yeah.
And things are working better that way. It's kind of a win-win. I mean, we're at the perfect time for that to succeed because right now it's just starting. Things are just changing. The Pi is getting really, really popular. You got your MK802s, all the small form factor stuff, and they run low, but yet people are realizing I don't need to carry around this ginormous gaming machine to do something anymore.
Yep.
And with the increase, so you have the increase of the small form factor computers, the increase of, the acceptability of Linux that runs great on small form factors.
Yep.
I mean, it were
and
just
the low power arm and the atoms.
Yeah, so we're starting that swing up, and this is a great time to jump in and get on that band and get on that, and then be able to deploy that to third world countries where they don't need that. They're not going to go out and buy $1,000 laptops. They're not going to go out and buy $1,000 machine. They don't need that. They just want to get online. They just want to do email. They want to communicate with the rest of the world.
Yep.
Exactly. Give them something that's so small, and then you personalize it with the people on site. And everybody wins.
It's a no-brainer. It's a win-win.
It is a win-win. So. And so I was really encouraged. Unfortunately, the BOF last night started at 9, so I was a little sleepy after not getting much sleep, but I got the gist of it and really enjoyed it.
I can relate to not being sleepy because I normally work 7 at night to 7 in the morning.
Oh.
And to turn my schedule upside down to be awake for these, it blew me away. So I fell asleep yesterday at 6 o'clock and didn't wake up till like 8 or something. It was not good. No, I fell asleep at
dinner.
I fell asleep at 3 o'clock and woke up in time to get to the dinner, the podcaster dinner over at Mongo.
Well, I got it. We walked in because you guys were there when we all met over there.
Okay. Oh.
Walked into Mongo, was standing there, and then because of West Coast, clients called. And I was standing outside on my phone, people emailed down and stuff like that. So I ended up having to walk back here, missed all the dinner to work. And so by the time I was done, it was like, it's 8 o'clock here and it's 5 o'clock there. And everybody's like, let's party. So the good news is today's Saturday. They're not working. I have enough stuff that I can just push off till Monday. And I don't worry about that. So today is me.
There you go.
I'm excited about that.
I was going to work a little from my room the other night. But this is my personal laptop, not my work laptop, and my password file on here is old.
Oh, well. Yeah, exactly.
I was really bummed.
I know, exactly. There's always a silver lining somewhere.
So, yep. And so that's about it. We got anybody else? Thank you very much for stopping by.
Oh, yeah, thank you, guys.
Coming by.
Thanks.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Hey.
Tell us who you are.
I'm Daniel Thau. Some people call me Paradigm. I'm the founder and lead developer of Bedrock Linux.
All right. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think we've reviewed Bedrock. Mary's reviewed Bedrock on the show, I think.
I think she met you here last year.
I see.
Yeah.
Right. And she reviewed Bedrock on the show, I'm pretty sure.
Did she like it?
I don't remember. We can go back through the archives and look.
Yeah, I think she said it a lot of prominence, if I remember right.
Okay, yes. That's a very fair description.
Did you see any of the talks yesterday or anything?
No, was not able to make it yesterday.
So you're just in here today?
Yeah, like to me, I just got here. I got here last night, so I didn't get to see anything. So this is me just coming in too.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So you're just here promoting Bedrock?
I came here before Bedrock started, so it's not just for it. I do like this event.
Okay.
But yeah, that might be part of the reason they managed to make it.
So tell us a little bit about Bedrock Linux.
So the idea is I couldn't pick which distro I wanted. A lot of them have advantages and disadvantages. Like I really like how stable something like Debian or RHEL is, but I miss having updated packages from Arch, for example. The idea behind Bedrock Linux is it messes with the file system in such a way that you can install packages without conflicting, so that you can have the majority of your packages be from Debian, so you have something really stable, but if you want something cutting edge from Arch, you can just go ahead and install it and it just works.
You can cross the packages like that?
Yes.
Wow. Can you cross RPMs and Debs?
Yeah. You name a distro, odds are pretty good it'll work.
Wow. That's cool. That's pretty impressive.
So yeah, like when Steam first launched, they were only supporting, I think, one version and one release of Ubuntu.
Right.
So I just used the Ubuntu libraries, installed those packages, and it worked fine.
That's cool. So do you keep the separation by keeping separate library lists or library folders? Or?
Yeah, usually the way it works is you have a bunch of directories, one for each distro.
Right.
And then I mess with the file system in such a way that they'll all see the same home folder, for example. But anything that would conflict is kept separate.
So like basically what you're doing then is like chroot jailing each program. Is it inside its own chroot jail?
That's part of it. That's what keeps things from conflicting, but at the same time, I want them to interact. So, like, if you use your web browser to download a PDF and you want your PDF reader to read that PDF, they have to be able to talk to each other. So it's not completely
not
jailed.
Totally jailed.
Yes.
Okay.
Just as much as is necessary to avoid conflicts.
That's cool. So you have Bedrock as, like, the main, and then you have, like, all these mini distros within it that's running.
Exactly.
That's very cool.
That is really nifty. I kind of like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... But I'm probably not going to use a distro.
I understand. I'm not pressuring anyone.
Right.
Getting the word out's enough.
Yeah. It's definitely something that if I weren't set in my ways already, I would look at. So
yeah.
So no, had it been around fair. Had it been around 9 years ago when I started using Linux. So yeah, that is really cool. Bedrock Linux.
Yeah.
All
that
right.
That is cool.
Anything else?
You want to, what's your website just?
Bedrocklinux.org.
Bedrocklinux.org, all right. We'll get that in our show notes.
Excellent, thank you.
We've got it out there, so.
What's your name again?
Daniel.
D-A-N-E-A-L?
I-E-L. I hope. That'd be really embarrassing if I got that wrong, wouldn't it?
It's not Danielle. Sorry.
All right. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Kudo.
Cheers.
Messed up media.
Sorry. SourceForge.
Oh.
Turn the card over.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Excellent.
So you're Daniel also.
I am a Daniel.
So was the last gentleman. So tell us a little bit about your experiences here.
So let's see. I was here yesterday, and I kind of hung on the Ubuntu conference side of things. The one talk I really liked was Emma Marshall. She's from System 76. But
right.
She was, her focus was really just about how do you help education? How do you take Linux? She had a great story about a woman who had taken a bunch of free equipment, put Linux on it. I mean, this is getting over the Windows thing. Windows licenses are expensive. My kids have been through school. That was an issue back then. And this woman's taken a hands-on approach to putting Ubuntu on used hardware, put it in the classroom, and just having a great success. No licenses, free cost, great ability for these people to get educational tools in front of their kids.
A lot of that comes down to, I used to have a company, Charter School IT Techs, where that was my goal, was to bring
implementing open source into the classroom. Mm-hmm. And the pushback I got was from most places was incredible.
Because they don't know anything about it. They pay for it and they get support, and so...
I was able to get it into their server rooms, but they didn't want it anywhere near their desktops.
Yeah, yeah, because it's alien.
Right, yeah. And what they see, they think the graphics is what the program is or what's important. Because if they're okay with the server and it does the same thing, they don't realize what's going on in the background. So they should, you know, Linux should be, you know, fine. But it's what they see is what we have to break down and,
absolutely.
Get in there. Right. Right.
Absolutely.
And what do you do?
I'm the community manager for SourceForge.
Excellent.
I'm not here selling anything.
Right.
I'm here connecting with the community. This is part of our community, and I go out.
Sure.
And I have a little bit of fun because I get to do some travel and go places, like going to the Linux Symposium in Ottawa.
I've used SourceForge a lot. So.
Well, over time, pretty much everyone has, whether they know it or not.
Right.
Right. If you're looking for software, you end up finding it on SourceForge. And a lot of people just click and download it. And you know what? That's great. We found out that a bunch of people pull down software, they don't know us, and that's okay, right?
Yeah.
But also developers go there because we're OSI.
Sure.
You know, most of our stuff is OSI compliant licenses. Yep. So you know when you come to SourceForge, you're going to find some source. You can actually do something with it.
And
there's a license.
You're open source friendly, and
absolutely,
that's a beautiful thing.
So and back when we started out as an open source platform, we went proprietary and we got spanked for that, right?
Yes,
open
I
source
that.
Community really doesn't like when you're a closed platform.
Yep.
So we've gone back open. So SourceForge is now powered by Allura, which is actually incubating with Apache. So it's actually Apache incubating, Allura incubating with Apache, I think, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right.
But it's very cool because it's an absolutely open platform. We have people from the community that are jumping in, contributing in there, fixing bugs, adding plugins. We had some people, we found out there were some people adding plugins already for this thing.
Yeah.
So it's nice because having gone open, now the community actually is engaged.
Right.
And obviously that's what I care
about. That's how software really grows.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old book by Eric Raymond, Cathedral and the Bazaar. The bazaar is just where you want to have the totally open environment where the software is just going to grow,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to that closed out cathedral. So
No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be going to the Linux Symposium in Ottawa in November. I think it's the 12th or 13th, something like that. I'm going to be giving a paper. I have put a proposal in, they've accepted it, and we're going to talk about our experience of taking SourceForge open. You know, having been open, gone closed, and then come back, and what it took to actually get the engineers to convince a business that has stock on Wall Street to say, yeah, let's open that up, right? Because this is a lot of what everyone's talking about this weekend, which is we see the growth of open source. You can see that it's not a movement anymore. It's a fact.
Yes.
It's a fact that businesses are looking to not only save money, but do smart things.
Sure.
Because the community is taking care of it.
That's like the company I work for. We contribute back to open source all the time to mostly like things like Magento and PHP, but it's still...
Yeah.
The community.
Right. You know, for years I've been hearing people saying, oh, open source is growing, Linux is growing. But it's nice to hear from somebody like you guys, SourceForge, saying, you know, you can see numbers happening and you can see what's going on. And it's exciting that, you know, more and more is happening like this.
Yeah. I'll have to find a presentation because there's some really good information that I found on one of the slides. And this is a commercial company that's making an open source play or something. But they showed that growth of open source from where, you know, it's really the growing trend.
Sure.
Right. So this isn't so much even stuff from our view, from our perspective. We have projects. We have people that come and they maintain projects. And one of the complaints you'll hear about SourceForge is like, well, there's a bunch of stuff there that's dead. I was talking to Mad Dog Hall about that last night. He says it's not dead. It's just done.
Right.
You start something, you finish it. You complete it, right?
Yes, exactly. There is the concept that something is finished.
Yeah, there is, and that's key. And so, again, I'll find this presentation after we get off this, but I'll send it, you guys the link to it.
Yeah.
Because it's good. It's actually on SlideShare. Because it really just shows that trend, shows numbers that support where people were buying stuff before, and now the model has really switched around where people are more looking towards open source to solve their problems. So.
True. So if you send us a link, though, do it on G+ for SMLR, because our website currently is down because 1&1 dicked us around.
You guys have a card?
We do not. It's just...
You have my card. Send me an email.
You'll send them an email?
Give me both your contact data so I can reach out to you. I'm not familiar with your podcast. It would be great to hear where you have that planted.
Yeah, and we actually have a third host. She's just not here with us.
Yeah, she's not here because it's her birthday, so she went to D.C.
Go figure.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Sorry. Right. So, yeah, cool. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for stopping by.
My pleasure.
Guys,
you want to sit down and tell us a little bit about your experiences?
I'm also doing this.
So you're with the Mintcast?
Well, I'm not officially with them as such. I'll say that, but I've been listening to Mintcast for about 3 months now or so.
Okay.
I had listened to it years ago, but the guys who run it now, Rob and Scott, you ever listened to it?
Yes.
Yeah. I've been pretty constant. I'm in the IRC most Monday nights, and they heard I was coming here. He says, okay, be our official rep.
All right. Yeah, that's cool.
So, there you go. Podcast. There you go.
Yeah.
So, Peter, right?
Yes. Mint Spider.
Oh, Mint Spider. All right. Yeah.
So, yep. The Mintcast is an excellent podcast. They're one of the very first podcasts I ever listened to. So.
Excellent. Yeah, they cover a lot, and so they do a whole range. So what do you cover,
Sunday Morning Linux Review. We do a kernel update, and then when Mary's here, she usually does like a distro review, and she does the KDE Corner. We cover current events and stuff that's going on in open source. Tony does the distributions and what was released in the last week and things like that.
Right. So is it live, or you can download it?
We do it both. We do a live broadcast when we make the recordings, and it's downloadable.
Excellent, because Sunday morning I'm in church.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're moving our record time. It'll be Sunday.
It's still going to be released on Sunday, but we're going to record on Thursday nights now.
Okay, cool. Right. That'll be excellent.
So your accent's interesting.
Yes, I'm from Scotland.
Scotland, all right.
Moved to America in 99, 14 years ago.
Okay.
Met a wife online in a Christian chat room, IRC room, back in 97. So we were the first.
Yeah.
Online
dating. I've been living in Kentucky ever since.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I attend a lug down there. I've been into Linux 5 years. And I attend Bluegrass Linux User Group, BG Lug. Been going there about 5 years or so. And it's been a great group, great help.
Excellent. Have you seen any of the presentations or talks so far?
I was here last night. I saw Mad Dog. And I went to a couple of the Birds of a Feather sessions.
Excellent.
On lugs and on Android.
And what'd you think of those Birds of a Feather sessions?
It's good to get people together and get them talking.
Yeah. And so what do you do?
I work for a food bank.
Okay.
God's Pantry Food Bank, Lexington, Kentucky.
Yep.
Been there 14 years. Warehouse, welcome center.
Yep.
Do all the ordering, purchasing. We cover 50 counties, and we distribute 24 million pounds of food.
Wow, that is
good. And that's barely meeting the need.
Wow.
I'm also the IT guy.
Yeah.
So far, they've realized that there's so much IT needs, they're actually splitting my job, and somebody else is getting the IT. I'm keeping the ordering.
Okay.
All right.
So I'm not sure who they're hiring, but hopefully somebody good.
Yes.
But it's all Windows based.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Even the phone system is old. It's a Nortel wired.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for stopping by there.
No problem.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I'll pass this recording on too.
All right.
Excellent.
Thanks.
All ready?
Tell our listeners who you are.
We met last night at the dinner,
at
right?
The podcaster's dinner, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Handsome Pirate. I'm John Delaney on IRC. Oh, sorry. I'm John Delaney, Handsome Pirate on IRC. I screw around with Fedora on ARM. Just recently got hired by Red Hat. And I like chickens.
I like chickens. That is the best quote. That is the quote of the con. I like chickens.
Thank you, sir.
So where are you from?
Originally from Harkers Island, North Carolina. We talk funny.
Yeah.
Now I live in Raleigh because Red Hat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
And...
Very cool.
Indeed.
Yeah. That's interesting. Did you get a chance to see any of the con yesterday?
I got here... about 5:30 last night. So
what do you plan on seeing today? What's on your agenda?
Well, I'm giving a talk at 11 o'clock, Fedora on Arm.
Fedora on Arm.
And from there, I'm going to wing it.
You're going to wing it, huh? All right, excellent. And how is Fedora on Arm coming? How's it progressing?
Fedora 20. ARM will be a primary architecture, which means that if there's a problem with ARM on ARM architecture, just like if there's a problem on x86, it will block the entire release.
Oh, wow.
So it's considered to be there.
So they're going to be a core, it's going to be a core part of the distribution.
Indeed.
Excellent, cool. Excellent. So for Red Hat, are you going to be working on ARM for Fedora, or?
Basically, I believe I'm normally working on Anaconda, the installer.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, yeah.
I love Anaconda myself. Mary, on the other hand, has some problems with Anaconda.
No, it wasn't Anaconda. It was the Fedora installer.
No. Did you see Mary's partition scheme?
Oh, yeah.
It was Mary's effed up partition scheme.
I don't know. I used to have some pretty wacky partition schemes.
Oh, I tell you, I've been doing this a long time. I have never seen a partition scheme like this. She had... Partition one was an extended partition. Then
wait, what?
And then the other partitions were all out of order with where they were on the disk. It was nuts. I'm telling you right now.
She's nuts.
Okay, you can't blame Anaconda for something wacky.
That's what I said. I said that too. I said, Mary, this is your partition scheme. You've got to wipe this out and start over.
See, that's one of the cool things about GPG is you can have your partitions out of order on the disk and they don't care.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So that was Mary's partition scheme.
It was crazy.
Very cool. So, all right. Well, thanks for stopping by there, Mr. Pirate.
Handsome pirate. Thank you.
Thank you.
What is this?
IPv6.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You have another one for Matt?
Very cool. I think I can find room.
Excellent.
Because I think my Fedora sticker's going away.
Uh-oh. What did it do to earn that fate?
It's not Slackware.
We have a guy that, we're from Michigan,
okay.
And there's a guy from Grand Rapids that comes down and does IPv6 talks.
Oh, cool.
Michael Moll?
Yeah.
Michael Moll?
But he's really got me looking into it, but what I want to do is to be able to have my router do the IPv6...
It'll be the tunneling.
Tunneling, yeah.
Yeah.
But everything I've looked into, because I run a Linux distro as my router. Like right now I have IPFire. But I was trying to look for just about anything out there that'll do it. And he said the only thing out there is just to build your own and get it baked in. But
well, the nice thing is basically take an old router and put OpenWrt on it, and it's got all the tunnels.
Yeah, but he's already got one.
But if you're doing Linux distro, then...
Yeah, no, you're already ahead of the game. You need to find the 6 and 4 package.
Well, if it's just which distro? You said IPFire. What's that based on?
IPFire. It's based on IPCOP.
Yeah.
I just powered down, but I'll power back on.
And I just shut off myself. Sorry.
What are you good for?
Is it a...
It's on. Actually, we can let it power down. Go to tunnelbroker.net, and it has a... How do you... They'll also be your tunnel broker. Recommended.
Hurricane Electric is where I have my tunnel.
Yeah,
that's tunnelbroker.
Okay.
So go to tunnelbroker.net, plow around... There's a page that says choose your operating system, and then it gives you the config directions.
Oh, yeah.
And I would be shocked if some form of Linux wasn't right there.
That's very cool.
So go there, and then just spit it out for me. Some of them, you know, have such and such version number. Go there and make them work.
All right.
And hopefully it should work just like that. If not, they've got a pretty good forum where you can...
Oh, yeah.
Ask your questions.
Hurricane Electric, and they got that great course.
Yes.
But it's not really a course. It's more of, here's a problem, solve it, and then when you can solve it, you can get the next problem.
Yep. Their certification.
Right.
Which is a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you're listening to us. We're a podcast. We're the Sunday Morning Linux Review.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Tony and Matt. Who are you guys?
I'm Joni Julian, Kevin Audie. We're from North Carolina. not sure how to give a short sound bite.
Okay, are you
are you here for company or are you here for yourself?
Mostly for myself. I work at UNC Chapel Hill. I am in the networking group. So I'm much more interested in the networking side of the world. So,
you missed the great talk yesterday. It was the virtualization
of
the network.
I couldn't leave until, maybe. I have some...
It was semi-great.
I was going to say, there's a lot about SDM that I look at and I say, you're making it too complex. Come over here and let me show you what I do under the covers.
Well, this talk was half great because it was half talk and half covered SDN and half IBM pitch because it was given by IBM.
Oh, right. You're right. So it would only be about half good. And that's one of the problems they're hitting with SDN. If you take a big picture of what the software defined means, I can do that with other tools. At a certain point, I can't do it as easily, but you don't need the full complexity immediately, so you can start off. And UNC is not a small network. We have 50,000 users. Yeah. 5,000 switches, 125 routers. I'm in the networking group.
That's cool.
Kevin and I collectively do an IPv6 lab. To teach people. He has a very good workshop with it. I teach a class on network management there.
Do you guys have a link or a website or something?
Yeah.
See it right here. So this is actually
recording you right now.
I'm sorry, I should have told you that.
You're going to be on our show. It's too late, you're already on the show.
Are you causing trouble again?
Yes.
Okay. Good on you.
Did you have to ask?
I like to be thorough.
Okay. FlyingPenguinTech.org.
Cool.
And if you go around there.
Flying Penguin Tech. All right. Yeah, we'll definitely get that on there. Thanks for coming by.
And I guess on the side of that, I also get really excited about SNMP.
Oh, yeah?
SNMP?
Yes.
That is the first person I've ever met that gets excited about SNMP. SNMP is pretty cool. I don't get excited about it. Yes, this is true.
I twice got
did you know though that at work? That's why we switched from Optunagios to Zenos because you can monitor your SNMP devices right in Zenos. It works perfectly.
I know, but our Zenos fell flat on its face.
We're having some problems.
Yeah.
The problems we're having are delayed alerts, where stuff will go down and we'll actually fix it and then it alerts.
Yeah, the delayed alerts, it's too sensitive unless you tell it don't fail on one drop. Because SNMP is UDP. That's actually the beauty and the strength of it. When we get a day zero virus attack, SQL Slammer comes to mind, kicked in at 1 a.m. By 2 a.m., they paged my boss of something is blowing the doors off. What do we do? He was up. Okay, these are the switches I can't reach easily. And then he just consistently did the, you know, what port has, because we're expecting high utilization. So he basically kept sending the SNMP for what port has high utilization, and then he kept sending the kill that port. Two SNMP commands, and being the SNMP person in the group, who didn't get woken up. I love my boss, by the way.
Yeah.
Right there is why I like sleep. I don't think he does. And I said, how many times did you have to repeat a command? You know, and I know he's just sitting up arrow, return. And he said, I don't think I had to repeat any of them more than five times, and usually it was within three. That's the beauty. You cannot maintain TCP when someone's blowing the doors.
Because it'll drop the connection.
But a little tiny UDP, you just.
Because UDP doesn't care. I don't care if you get there, go. I don't care if you get there, go.
We're getting hit with SQL Slammer, and you can still get it in by the third time, almost every time. Killed all of those ports,
boom,
network comes back to life by the time everybody, well, actually that was a Saturday, but by the time the port sods who had to come in on a Saturday were ready to get to work, he'd already fixed the network.
That's cool.
A little tiny SMB.
Yeah.
And just, the fun things I can do.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's been good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
That's about it. Let's wrap up the show, Tony.
Yeah, I think we've got about 5 minutes before talks are starting.
Right, because I'm going to go.
So we're not going to have any listener feedback like we normally do?
No, we'll do it all next week.
Yeah, tooltip, all that will be next week. And no music either. So we're just going to wrap it up right now.
Wrap it up.
No.
All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review, and this is episode 101 at OLF.
Yes, 101 at the Ohio Linux Fest.
This is Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders saying, have a good week. See you next week.